Welcome to CYC Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 133. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. This past May was the Canadian National Child and Youth Care Conference in Vancouver, British Columbia. Prior to the actual conference, there was an education pre-conference. For this day, there were 13 different 10 to 15 minute long presentations. Over the course of the summer, we're going to be posting many of these short sessions on a weekly basis. As we release these episodes, I will not be saying much in the way of introductions, as each presentation was introduced by Heather Snell and Charlotte Serpa, who were emceeing the day. You can find out a little bit more about each presenter by going to cycpodcast.org, where we'll post a short bio. I hope you enjoy the first talk with Dr. Jaspreet Bal.
I have the pleasure of introducing Jaspreet Bal. And Jaspreet is faculty in the Child and Youth Work Program, Child and Youth Care Program at Humber College in Toronto. She's also a child and youth care practitioner, a community organizer, and activist. And her practice involves radical youth work with underserved populations across North America. She's on the board of directors of the Sikh Feminist Research Institute and on the advisory board of the Sikh Research Institute. So Jaspreet is our first 10 by 10 by 13. Welcome, Jaspreet.
So that I can walk, or thank you. All right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for letting me be your morning presentation and some nice light conversation about institutional racism with your breakfast. So in 10 minutes, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story and my journey to realizing that I was a brown person and how CYC made me so much more aware of that. So this is me. I grew up in Toronto. I was born in Toronto in the Jane Finch area, which now we call a priority neighborhood. When I was growing up, they were called very different things, one of which for me was home. And Melissa, I don't know if you can get this in your recording, but this is my cousin blowing out my birthday candle as my dad and my Babaji watch. So if anyone asks why I'm such a strong feminist, it's because I've been fighting the patriarchy since I was a toddler. So I grew up in a neighborhood where people of color were just people. So I didn't know that I was brown. And then when I was a little bit older, I moved to Brampton. And if anyone, any Brampton people in the room? No? Okay. So thank you, one person. Brampton. If anyone knows anything about Brampton, the dominant population, 44%, is South Asian. There's a 25% Caucasian population. After English, the most spoken language is Punjabi. So again, I didn't know I was brown. My grandparents lived there for over 30 years, never had to learn English. Our Walmart sells Punjabi food, our movie theater plays Bollywood films, our city councilor speaks Punjabi, our doctor speaks Punjabi, we have Punjabi TV and radio, our bus drivers speak Punjabi. My Babaji went to the park and played cards with his Punjabi friends. Again, didn't know I was brown. My first, like, real tangible memory of realizing that I wasn't white was when I moved to St. Catharines, Ontario. I went to Brock University, did my undergrad in child health, and when I moved into my residence, where other people were moving in with their, like, parent or their one other person that had dropped them off, and I showed up with a van, a car, first cousins, brother, sister, parents, grandparents that weren't able-bodied, but we put them in the room while we then put all my stuff in. One of the first non-Brampton people I bumped into said, "Oh, what's your name?" She was the residence coordinator. I said, "Jaspreet." And I always get a Z added to my name. I get Jaspreet a lot. So I said, "My name's Jaspreet." And she said, "Oh, Jaspreet, what a unique name." And I was like, "Oh, I'm not in Brampton anymore." Because my one Brampton person, do you know Turner Fenton? I'm a Turner Fenton alumni. When I went to Turner Fenton, one of my classes, I was one of three Jaspreets. Jaspreet is like the Ashley of Punjabi names. It's like a very not creative Punjabi name. The fact that someone thought my name was unique, I was like, oh, I'm not in Brampton anymore. And the further I got entrenched into educational institutions, the more I realized I was not white. So then I moved, I did my master's at Brock in child and youth studies, and then I moved to the heart of colonialism and capitalism in Canada, Kingston, Ontario, where I did my PhD in cultural studies at Queen's University, and it was so apparent. I was still amongst like-minded people because I was in a program of my choosing, but it was very much, I was constantly confronted by the fact that I wasn't like everyone else. If anyone here has been the pleasure of being to Kingston, beautiful city, but the colonialism is quite literally built into the walls there. It's the home of Sir Johnny MacDonald. You very quickly realize that you're not like everyone else. University and Union, the biggest intersection in our university, on a warm day where everyone was outside, you couldn't find a black face. So we still, at Queen's University, systemically keep out people of color. Okay, and then, and I know how incredibly privileged I am and how rare this is and how much hate I get for saying this, I got hired as a full-time faculty member when I graduated from my PhD, which doesn't happen. And at that point, I was desperate for a job. I would have done anything. And I was, I wish I could say that I had intentionally become a professor of child and youth care. But the truth was, Humber hired me. And now that I have some, I've been there for 3 years, and I have some insight into Humber's hiring process, I can understand why they hired me. So for those of you who are not from Ontario, we have, as a college that offers a degree program, we have a governing board, a provincial quality assurance board that mandates that 50% of our faculty have to have PhDs. So the overlap between people who have a child and youth care credential, so people who are child and youth care practitioners and have field experience, and also have a PhD is very slim. So what the system is forcing us to do is hire faculty that don't have a CYC credential to teach a CYC program. I was one of those people. And I, at that point, the wonderful Heather Snell, who is my Dumbledore, my mentor, she, after I was hired, came up to me and said, do you know who the core CYC readings are? And I was like, no. And did I know what the profession was? No. And so I continued my educational journey, and this time in towards the CYC profession. And I'm very proud to say that I now have a CYC credential. I have my CYCP. Thank you. And I'm so honored to be a part of this group of people. But I moved, I went from being hired, I found myself as a CYC because I was hired into a CYC program, and I wasn't a CYC. And two things happened when I became a CYC. And in my journey in this. One, I was like, oh, that's me. I immediately was like, this is what I've been doing my whole life anyways, and now I have words for it. This is what I do, this is what my practice is. And at the same time that I saw myself in this profession, I was like, whoa, this is not me. I don't see myself in the writers. I don't see myself in the core readings. I was the first full-time faculty of color that was hired in my program. Now we have a couple more. So 3 years ago, Humber College didn't have people at the table that weren't white. And so there were some things that happened as I continued being more deeply entrenched in educational institutions. And I've experienced the most validation and the most violence and racism I've ever experienced in my life. So I come from privilege, if I want to, it's not systemic privilege, but the privilege of being born into communities of color where I didn't know that, I grew up in very white systems. I went to a school where I held crosses on Remembrance Day and I sang to Jesus at Christmas and I, was sang songs about pioneers and Conestoga wagons and how they settled the land and all that. But I didn't personally feel the systemic impacts. And now I was very deeply entrenched in institutions where all of, if you're an educator, you put yourself at the front of a room and you use your body to teach. And for the first time in my life being a full-time educator, I had student feedback questionnaires where students felt like my race, my ethnicity, my culture was up for criticism. I got told in my SFQs, I cried the first time I read them, to stop talking so much about my Pakistani heritage. First of all, I'm a born in Canada. My dad is from Punjab, not the Pakistan side. My mom is from Rajasthan. If I was from Pakistan, I'd be so proud of that. I'd talk about all that time. I would talk about that all the time. I was told that I needed to talk more about white people. I was teaching a class in global perspectives. I was like, all of these things. So putting myself out there and not being able to step out of teaching about talking about race. I also, the endless microaggressions. I had a professor at Humber who she thought she might have been one of my elementary school teachers. She said, where did you go to elementary school? I said, well, I was born in the Jane Finch area. My first elementary school was Driftwood. She said, oh, that's okay. And I was like, I didn't apologize for it. I was forgiven for being born into a community of color by a nice, well-intentioned white professor. I have the pleasure of, I'm Jaspreet Ball, I have the pleasure of working with Jasjeet Ball, who, because people I work with refuse to learn my name, Jasjeet Ball gets my emails, has gotten one of my parking passes, my direct deposit, all of my communication from universities and colleges in Denmark, gets all the instructions for open house on my behalf, has had a book mailed to her on my behalf. Just a whole series of unending things. And a lot of this has been really challenging, but a lot of it has given me an opportunity to say, okay, this is where I need to come back into the profession and where I have something to give as well. Okay, so I was finally starting to realize, one, that I am brown, because I wasn't taught that growing up, and two, that it's okay and that it's a valuable thing. We had, while we were on strike, shout out to Ontario people who went on strike, and our apologies to the students, these signs went up, and so they were for the faculty, because the students weren't on campus. White supremacy groups put up signs outside of Humber that said it's okay to be white. And I was like, but wait, I just got here. I just realized it's okay to be brown, and you're already telling me there's that white fragility has started rearing itself. And I... there was this, I've had a lot of white colleagues and peers say to me, you know, I can't, it's so depressing, I have to turn off the news, I can't be on Facebook anymore. I don't get that choice. I don't get to take off my color and put it aside and say that I don't want to do this anymore. So when it comes to what I need from you, and this was really interesting too, because I was like, 10 minutes, and what do I have to add to the conversation on race and teaching? The answer is, the truth is, I don't have anything to add to the conversation on race and teaching. It's been said, it's been written about, there are think pieces and blogs and academic pieces. I just need you to do it. And so what I need you to do, thank you. Thank you. So what I need you to do is, I've got five things up here. One, know your race, talk about it. Talk about it on purpose, talk about it often. So because I can't take off my color, I never agreed. I never signed up to talk about race. Nobody asked me when I was hired, it was not put in my contract, that I would use my body and my identity to teach, but I don't have a choice. I don't get to take it off, so I make it a part of my teaching. For those of you who do get, your race does get to be invisible, I need you to make it visible. Because when we make whiteness invisible, it gives it power. So acknowledge that you have a race, make whiteness part of all of the other races, and do it on purpose. Use cultural humility. So I will leave it to you to find out. It's a framework that comes from the medical field, and it's one that I teach my students. I'm going to leave it to you to figure out what that is. But basically, don't come in ever assuming you know anything about anyone's experience. Ask questions instead. Here's a big one. Here's a tangible one. Hire Indigenous, Black, and other people of color. Do it on purpose. I've been told, microaggressions, right? I've been told that I only got this job because I'm a person of color. I've been told I'm lucky to have got this job. I've been told that this job that I have was meant for someone else, but because they were looking for a certain person, I got this job. Make that white insecure nightmare, make it a reality. Hire someone because they're a person of color. I'm okay with that. By the way, Humber, when I had overt racism happen in my classroom, they also had a meeting with different departments to find out how to solve the problem, and they forgot to invite me to that meeting. Yeah, real things that have happened. And I walked in at the last 10 minutes, because it was right before one of our faculty meetings, and I walked in the last 10 minutes to a room of mostly white people trying to figure out how to solve racism at Humber. I was like, should have put me on the doodle pool. It happened in my class. So hire Indigenous, Black, and people of color. use Indigenous Black and people of color as authors, go through your syllabuses, make sure that we are validating people as contributors to the field and then using their information. So right now, when we go to look for certain experiences, we have to go outside of CYC and then apply things from maybe social work or from other disciplines. We have the expertise in our discipline, but there is a huge problem where the children that we serve and the young people that we serve are not part of the knowledge production of our profession. So make sure that that changes. And the last one is super easy. Just listen. When you show up and if you recognize that someone else has an experience that you cannot speak to, then your job in that is different. So again, none of this is new. None of this is super innovative. I just need us all to agree to start doing it. So I have questions that you're going to talk about in the second half of the day. I'm here if you want to talk about it more, but I need you all to talk about it as well, because the work around race is not just the work of people of color. It's everyone's work. It needs to be led by people of color, acknowledging their expertise. But it is exhausting. It is exhausting because I don't get to take the skin off. I don't get to take a break from it. So I need everyone to help me do this work. Thank you.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.